This is the RTE News at 1 with Brian Dobson. Good afternoon. The headlines this Monday lunchtime. Politicians attending the North-South Ministerial Council in Armagh have expressed a hope for continued and expanded cooperation. The Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, will formally step down from office this evening. And tens of millions of people across North America are expected to witness a total eclipse of the sun later today. The news in detail with Brian Jennings.
The Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has taken part in his final official engagement, a meeting of the North-South Ministerial Council in Armagh. Speaking afterwards, Mr. Varadkar said he was confident the Stormont Assembly would survive the political turmoil caused by the resignation of Geoffrey Donaldson as leader of the DUP. Our Northern editor, Vincent Kearney.
This was the first in-person meeting of the North-South Ministerial Council for more than 3 years. All members of the Cabinet attended, along with Stormont's ministers. It was the first ever such meeting to be hosted by a Nationalist First Minister, with Sinn Féin's Michelle O'Neill in the chair. Speaking afterwards, the Taoiseach said he believes the power-sharing institutions of Stormont are sufficiently stable to withstand the political shockwave caused by the resignation of Geoffrey Donaldson as leader of the DUP. New Fine Gael leader and Taoiseach in waiting Simon Harris maintained a low profile, arriving early on his own without speaking to the media, leaving his predecessor to enjoy what's left of his time in the political limelight. Vincent Kearney, RTÉ News, Armagh.
Mr. Varadkar will formally step down from office later today when he informs the President, Michael D. Higgins, of his resignation. Mr. Varadkar made the surprise announcement of his decision to step down 2 weeks ago, saying he no longer felt he was the best person for the job. Tomorrow, the new leader of Fine Gael, Simon Harris, is expected to be elected Taoiseach in the Dáil. Mr. Harris will then appoint his new cabinet. Ukraine and Russia have accused each other of causing an explosion at the Russian-controlled Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. Officials in Moscow said the blast was caused by a series of attacks by Ukrainian drones yesterday. The head of the UN's atomic watchdog, Rafael Grossi, warned that the strikes raised the risk of a major nuclear accident. Ukrainian MP Alexei Goncharenko said it was obvious Russia was responsible.
I think this is just to show that they're reckless and crazy and try to make afraid the whole world.
Nicaragua is seeking to halt German arms exports to Israel. This morning, the International Court of Justice in The Hague began hearing the case in which Germany is accused of breaching the Genocide Convention by supplying weapons to Israel. Germany said it completely rejected the accusation and described Nicaragua's presentation as grossly biased. Nicaragua's legal representative, Carlos José Angulo Gómez, began laying out the case against Germany.
Members of the court, German officials have recognized that the situation in Gaza raises doubts about the respect of elementary rules of international law. These questions need to be addressed. Yet, while we speak, the export of German weapons and military equipment to Israel, likely to be used for committing these grave violations of international law, is continuing.
Millions of people across the United States are looking forward to a total solar eclipse this evening. The moon will completely block out the sun for 4 minutes. The eclipse will be viewable, weather permitting, along a path starting in Mexico and then crossing through the United States and into Canada. An estimated 30 million people will be in the path of the eclipse. Brian Day, a NASA astronomer who's in Mazatlan in northwest Mexico, said he's confident he will be among the first to witness the eclipse.
This is the first place on the continent where the moon's shadow will touch. So the moon's shadow will first touch down in the Pacific Ocean. It'll come racing from that direction. It'll come washing over us. And the first view will be from here.
And now the weather.
Oh! RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. Building a new home? Trust Grant to help you on your heating journey with their home heating design service. Visit grant.ie.
It'll be wet across most areas today. Rain and drizzle will continue to push northwards across the country. West Connacht and the far northwest will, however, stay largely dry. The rain will persist for much of the day across the Midlands, south and east. It'll be heaviest in the southeast, with flooding likely. Highest afternoon temperatures will range from 5 to 10 degrees. And as a warning, that northwesterly winds will reach gale force 8 or strong gale force 9 at times tonight into tomorrow afternoon on coastal waters from Belfast Lough to Hoathead to Hookhead and on the Irish Sea. Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Still to come this lunchtime. On his last full day as Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar travels north to meet Stormont ministers and urges them to stick with power sharing. We'll hear from Armagh. A big increase in credit union mortgages after new rules allow them to issue more home loans. Web Summit co-founder Paddy Cosgrave resumes control 6 months after stepping down as CEO over his Gaza tweets. A renewed warning over faulty gas cooker hobs from the Consumer Protection Commission, and more than 40% of electricity from wind last year. Wind Energy Ireland on a record march for renewables.
If you have a TV, you must have a TV licence. It's the law. Make your payments easy with yearly, twice yearly, quarterly or monthly direct debits. See tvlicense.ie for more. Your TV licence made easier. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Surge in demand for credit union farming loans. Cultivate Credit Union farm loan applications have doubled in just 2 years to over 50 million euro. Whether you need a stocking loan, finance for a farm building, a tractor or a TAMS loan, we're here to help. Visit your local Cultivate Credit Union today as part of National Cultivate Week to find out more about our personal service, quick loan approval and competitive rates. Cultivate, for farmer-friendly finance from your local credit union. Loans are subject to approval. Terms and conditions apply. The cost of your repayments may increase. If you do not meet the repayments on your loan, your account will go into arrears. This may affect your credit rating, which may limit your ability to access credit in the future. Credit unions in Ireland are regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
This is Anne Doyle with an urgent appeal for UNICEF. As traumatised children in Gaza stare down the barrels of guns, mortars and tanks, another threat looms. Famine is hurtling towards them. UNICEF is rushing food to hungry children in Gaza, but much more is needed. UNICEF will not give up on the children of Gaza, and I urge you not to either. Please visit unicef.ie and help save a child's life today. Thank you.
Hello again, you're listening to the news at 1. The Taoiseach Leo Varadkar will formally step down from office today when he informs President Michael D. Higgins of his resignation. Mr. Varadkar's final engagement as Taoiseach has been a meeting of the North-South Ministerial Council in Armagh. He and other members of the Cabinet, including the new Fine Gael leader Simon Harris, travelled to Northern Ireland for the meeting. Speaking afterwards, Mr. Varadkar said he was confident that the institutions in the North are stable.
I have to say I am confident that the institutions are stable and will be sustainable. Events happen in politics, whether it's changes of leadership, there'll be elections for the House of Commons, there'll be elections for the Dáil, all within the next year. And what's really important is that institutions should be able to function through them and withstand any disruption that may occur. And that's happened in the past, and I'm sure it can in the future. And I know from my experience, having served in government for quite some time and having observed the institutions functioning and not functioning, what we know is that whenever they fall, they tend not to be re-established for many years. And I think we should always bear that in mind and make sure that we don't see another break happen.
Northern Ireland's Deputy First Minister Emma Little-Pengelly said she was determined to provide stability to ensure that the power-sharing executive can continue in a positive tone.
Like, I'm absolutely determined to provide what stability I can to ensure that the executive can continue in a positive tone. We have an important number of weeks coming up where we'll be discussing the draft programme for government and the budget. Those are two key documents in terms of the agenda for government and ensuring that this is an executive that can and will deliver for the people of Northern Ireland. The people of Northern Ireland demand that stability. They demand that delivery. I am very conscious of that, and that is what I will be focusing on.
Let's talk now to our Northern Editor, Vincent Kearney, who's standing by in Armagh. Vincent, leadership changes in both the North and on this side of the border as well, but the message from that meeting of the North-South Ministerial Conference, one very much of continuity.
Absolutely, Brian. And it has to be said that the tremors from that political earthquake of Geoffrey Donaldson's sudden resignation are still being felt here. I spoke to a senior member of the DUP who attended the meeting today. He said the party still remains in an absolute state of shock. And certainly the focus from First Minister Michelle O'Neill and then from Deputy First Minister Emma Little-Pengelly today was all on the stability of the institutions. They spoke about their desire to maintain working relationships and to keep the institutions going. That was mirrored in comments by Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach himself. So certainly they were painting a very positive image, sending a message that despite the political turmoil, it's business as usual as far as they're concerned.
Now, Leo Varadkar with the other leaders obviously centre stage at today's meeting, but one imagines quite a bit of interest, particularly on the northern side, in the incoming Taoiseach, Simon Harris, who was there.
Indeed he was. Interesting to note, Brian, a very different tack today. Clearly Leo Varadkar is in the political limelight. Simon Harris, I think, took a very deliberate decision. He arrived quite early on his own. He went into the meeting without speaking to the media at all. We understand he then left through a back door as well without addressing the media. He was nowhere to be seen in terms of TV cameras because obviously people would have liked the opportunity to have a chat. He clearly didn't attend the press conference afterwards either. Now, I told that during the meeting, he was quite low-key as well. A unionist in particular will just want to assess what kind of Taoiseach he's likely to be because, you know, they were quite critical of Leo Varadkar at times. They did view him as a little bit too green. They, of course, blame him for creating the Irish Sea border because they say he fought so hard to ensure there would be no hard border on the island of Ireland that he left no other alternative other than the Irish Sea border, which they say weakens Northern Ireland's position within the UK. But certainly today, I don't think they got much time to assess just what kind of a leader is going to be, because DUP sources and those from Sinn Féin as well say that Simon Harris kept a very low profile today. That, of course, will change the next time he's here, because next time he's here, he will not be able to avoid being in the limelight.
Well, clearly, in terms of Leo Varadkar's engagement with Northern Ireland, Brexit was perhaps the dominant issue, but also the restoration of power sharing at Stormont after a previous collapse and Simon Coveney's role in that. And Mr. Varadkar today warning Northern politicians that while it might be easy to collapse the institutions, it's very difficult to get them back up and running.
Indeed, but it's interesting because he did voice his confidence and optimism that the institutions are stable enough and strong enough to withstand the current political turmoil. But as you say, he did add that little bit of warning as well, stressing that history shows that if the institutions fall, they can take a long time, years, to get back up and running again, and saying that we need to avoid another break, another fall of the Assembly. So that message was very loud and clear, and Michelle O'Neill, Emma Little-Pengelly nodding along as he said that. And interesting as well, to Brian, Micheál Martin, Minister for Foreign Affairs, Taoiseach, was very warm in his praise of Leo Varadkar, not just for his work during those Brexit post-trade negotiations, but also for his work in Northern Ireland across the board, praising him for the very hard work he had done, and again wishing him all the best for the future. But it had to be said as well, Brian, Leo Varadkar himself did appear a bit subdued in that press conference. I told you he was subdued during the meeting himself. He's still actually here in Armagh. Perhaps he isn't looking forward to that trip back to Dublin to hand in his resignation today, because he seems to be staying here longer than his drivers or officials expected.
All right, Vincent, we'll leave it there. Well, looking ahead to the rest of the day, let's get the thoughts of our political correspondent Micheál Hann, who joins us now from our Oireachtas studio at Leinster House. Micheál, how's the day going to unfold in terms of Mr. Radcliffe's departure?
when Leo Varadkar returns to Dublin later on, he will make his way to Áras an Uachtaráin, and some almost 7 years since he received his seal of office to become Taoiseach the first time, he will inform the President of his intention to resign. And I suppose that is the big formal significant moment that will bring the curtain down on Leo Varadkar's time as Taoiseach, his second time to hold that office. Interestingly enough too, the usual part of the political week here on a Monday night where the government parties meet, that won't happen. Instead, the focus very much then on tomorrow morning at 10:30 when the Dáil meets and when Simon Harris will be nominated and seconded for Taoiseach. Now, it doesn't seem like the other parties are going to put forward a candidate in that vote. Sinn Féin, Labour, the Social Democrats, Solidarity, PPP, all saying this lunchtime that they don't intend to do so. So the numbers are there for Simon Harris. I mean, it's subject to change, but at the moment it looks like he could have up to 86 votes.
Right. The first business for the new Taoiseach, for Mr. Harris tomorrow, if and when he's elected by the Dáil, of course, is forming his new cabinet. And I think all ministers will have to be reappointed, won't they? Even those that will remain in place. But of course, the focus on who will be coming in and who might be going out.
Yes, so sometime around 1 o'clock tomorrow, it's Simon Harris would make his way to Áras an Uachtaráin. He would then become the Taoiseach formally after the chat with the President, and then it's back to Leinster House and that frenzied period of speculation when he appoints the cabinet. That should be known sometime before six. There are many, many scenarios doing the rounds here. There have been fairly consistent views, and that is that Peter Burke, the Minister for European Affairs at the moment, that he's in line for promotion, and also Jennifer Carroll McNeill, who is a junior minister at Finance. They have been the favourites who've been mentioned. Of course, there are two vacancies, the departure of Leo Varadkar and the departure of Simon Coveney, showing that there are two vacancies that have to be filled. Another name that's coming into the mix quite strongly at the moment is the OPW Minister, Patrick O'Donovan. I suppose that does send on the fact that Fine Gael do have a weakness in Munster. Could a senior position or a position at cabinet at least be a possibility for him now? The junior ministers will be announced the following day, it seems, and they are obviously intricately linked because there are vacancies there as well. There are discussions taking place. There are people pondering things already around the junior ministerial ranks and whether they would take up roles or not. So this is going to be an interesting 24 hours.
And what about Helen McEntee? What's the thinking at this stage about her future in government, Micheál? All the indications of something of a fight back by her to retain that justice portfolio.
There is a sense that Helen McEntee could be safe in her position at Justice, because some say that that's a fairly short term anyway. What is it, 10, 11 months before a general election, and that a new minister coming in would be on the back foot for that reason. There is a counter view within Fine Gael that it is the party, it sees itself as the party of law and order, that a new appointment should go into that role and that it would give a fresh face to things. That view doesn't seem to be the majority one at the moment, but equally, when it comes to the real tough decisions, despite speculation and the like, the incoming Taoiseach would have kept his cards close to his chest.
And in relation to the timing of the next election, Micheál, Mr. Harris has been saying his intention is to go the distance, which will be about 11 months from now. But what about the chances of an autumn election post-budget?
Yes, I think there is a reality, despite the fact that that first meeting that took place between Simon Harris and Eamon Ryan and Micheál Martin was described as positive, and there were commitments made to keep the show on the road into next year to go the full distance. There is equally a reality now that this is an electoral cycle one way or the other, and if tensions were to rise, or if there were a crisis, that there's always that chance of an autumn election. But it does seem for the moment, even though plans will be made in all parties for that scenario of an autumn election, that initially, at least, the commitment will be try to keep things there in place until next year.
Micheál Lehan at Leinster House, thank you for that. Credit unions across the country lent €3 billion to their members last year, bringing the total outstanding loans to €6.3 billion. According to the annual credit unions report from the Central Bank today, there's also been a big increase in mortgage lending by the sector. Credit union house loans increased from €317 million in 2022 to €484 million in 2023. That's a rise of more than 50%. The Credit Union Development Association, which represents 50 credit unions, says total new credit union mortgage lending could reach €1 billion a year by 2027. The association's CEO, Kevin Johnson, said credit unions want their own lending limits to be increased.
So, for example, a typical credit union is allowed to have 5% of its assets held in mortgages. For the larger credit unions, those over 100 million in assets, on application and on approval by the central bank, that can go up as high as 15%. And what we would like to see is a continued prudent growth of each of the phased approach to allow higher limits and indeed to facilitate credit unions to do more in the home loan market and also in the small business lending market as well.
Kevin Johnson of the Credit Union Development Association will join us here in studio as the Deputy Governor of the Central Bank, Sharon Donnery. You're very welcome to the programme and thanks for coming in to talk to us. So the report today details the picture in terms of credit union lending, not just in mortgages, but in business and indeed in personal loans as well. What's the picture that it paints?
Yes, so we publish this report every year to try, as you say, give the public a sense of the sector and its size and evolution. So I think we continue to see a credit union sector that plays a very important role in the financial system overall. You mentioned there yourself the just over €6 billion in lending that credit unions have done. They also have about €17 billion in deposits. And we have now almost 200 credit unions in the country and about 80 or so of them also offering current accounts. So I think these developments come at a time when the financial system itself is changing a lot. You know, we see big move towards digitisation. We see different types of firms coming into the system now, new payment firms, online banks and so on. And it shows, I think, the role that credit unions are playing within that.
And specifically what's been happening in relation to mortgage lending, it's still in terms of the overall mortgage market relatively small, but almost €500 million in mortgage lending last year.
Yeah, so I think over the last number of years, we've seen credit unions sort of moving more in this direction in terms of looking at mortgage lending, for example. And obviously, customers and their members as well, I think, interested in getting different products and services, not only from the, say, main banks or non-banks. A big change that's happened over the last year or so as well has been new legislation introduced by the Oireachtas, which is about, I suppose, supporting and enabling credit unions to develop over the next number of years. And for our point of view at the Central Bank, we want to see that happen in a very safe and prudent way. Kevin mentioned that there in your little clip. And we see, I think, potential for credit unions to continue to grow these mortgage products over the coming years.
Do you think he's right? Could mortgage lending hit €1 billion within just a couple of years?
Yeah, so I think, of course, the capacity is there for credit unions to be able to do that. It's very important from our point of view, of course, that they do that in a safe and prudent way, that they look carefully at the amounts of money that they're lending, who they're lending to, and so on, and that they have the right governance and risk management around that. But I think, as everybody knows, you know, the housing market continues to be very strong. Lots of people looking for mortgages, notwithstanding some of the very challenging issues around housing supply. And so there is potential, I think, for mortgages to continue to grow over the coming years.
He mentioned those lending limits, 5% for the smaller credit unions, 15% with those, I think it's more than €100 billion in assets. Is that right? €100 million in assets. Now, is that something that could happen?
Yeah, so I mean, the lending limits from our point of view are there for very important reasons, which, as I said, is about making sure that credit unions continue to develop in a safe and prudent way. It is true that we are doing a review of those lending limits, but I think even absent that review, there's still plenty of capacity, even within the current framework, for credit unions to continue to grow their mortgage lending in any event, even before we do that review. So I think there is that potential there.
Because there's been a lot of talk of recent years after the departure of quite a number of our high street banks of a lack of competition in the market, and the credit union sector is an area where enhanced competition could be coming from.
Yeah, so I think to that point about competition, as I said, we do see the financial sector changing quite a lot. So we have players like credit unions in the market who can continue to grow. We see maybe other online banks coming into the market. We've seen big developments in terms of non-banks over the last number of years. So we are very conscious, I think, of that competition issue. But the market is changing. And as these figures show today, with credit unions now lending about half a billion euro last year in terms of mortgage lending, there is also potential for them to play an important role.
Separately, you've published a report today in relation to mortgage switching. Now, again, this is something which goes back to this question of competition. It doesn't seem to paint a picture in which people are readily switching their mortgages.
So I think it's certainly true that, you know, we hear a lot of discussions about how challenging it can be to switch your mortgage. But we do know, particularly, I think, since interest rates started to increase, that people have been looking at this more closely and that there is potential to save money if you can switch your mortgage. The statistics that we published today do show, actually, that there has been quite a bit of switching either within firms, so switching maybe from variable to fixed, or even across firms, so moving from banks to non-banks or non-banks back to banks. So I think it shows that there is potential there for people to be able able to switch. And obviously, you know, there's lots of information out there in terms of our own public information on our website and on the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission about how you can go about that.
And would you say that the people should, on maybe on a reasonably regular basis, just look at their mortgage arrangements, see what they're paying, see what might be on offer?
Yeah, so I think that's true generally of financial services. I think a lot of people are often put off thinking about their financial services, and I know sometimes it can appear quite challenging or quite complex. But it is good practice, I think, to look at all of your products and services, make sure that they still meet your needs. Are there other products out there that would be better than you for you? And certainly in some cases, there can be substantial savings if you do that. And of course, there's a strong consumer protection framework. If you're switching your current account, for example, you know, there are rules and requirements around how you can go about doing that. So I think there is lots of support there for people too.
And could the central bank be exerting more pressure on lenders to make it easier to switch?
Yeah, so some of the things we're doing at the moment is looking at our consumer protection code, which is our, I suppose, foundation requirements around how banks and other firms, insurance companies and brokers and so on, interact with their customers. And of course, a very important part of that is about making sure that customers get the right support when they're looking for different products and services. And we have a public consultation on in relation to that at the moment.
Just a final question before I let you go. We've had some comments from, I think, State Street and a number of other financial institutions here saying, calling on the central bank to do more to promote the industry here. They say there's been something of an exit of talent from the sector because of the way the sector has been run and regulated. Is that something that the central bank, you think, should be doing?
Well, to be fair, I mean, I've seen media commentary around that over the last number of weeks. I think from our point of view at the central bank, we're very focused on working in the public interest to make sure the financial system meets the needs of consumers and the economy. You know, memories are fading maybe a little bit since the financial crisis, but from our point of view, I think it remains very important that the lessons of the crisis are learned and that the central bank continues to focus on its stability mandate and meeting the public interest. I mean, in the end, obviously, it's a matter for the Oireachtas what the central bank's role is. And as I said, I've seen some media commentary around that, but I don't think there's any specific proposal, for example, in relation to that.
Sharon Donnery, Deputy Governor of the Central Bank of Ireland, thanks very much indeed for talking to us.
Thank you.
The co-founder of the tech events company Web Summit, Paddy Cosgrave, has returned to the role of CEO 6 months after he stepped down following controversy over comments he made on the Israel-Hamas conflict. Mr. Cosgrave drew criticism after posting on social media platform X that, quote, war crimes are war crimes even when committed by allies on the 13th of October. A number of commercial partners, including tech giants Google and Meta, withdrew from Web Summit from the conference in Portugal in November of last year following his comments. In a statement on Twitter X this morning, Paddy Cosgrave said he'd stepped away and had reconnected with Web Summit friends and I listened to what they had to say. Well, Charlie Taylor is technology and innovation editor with the Business Post and he joins us now on the line with more on this. So 6 months away from the chief executive's chair, Charlie, but Paddy Cosgrave is back.
Yeah, I think though with this, it's very much a case of the big surprise is there's no surprise. Even when he stepped down initially and Catherine Ma came in on an interim basis, well, at that stage, it wasn't seen as an interim basis. It was assumed and it was very much put out there as though she was in for the long haul. She came in, but there was talk, particularly in tech circles at that time, that he was only going to be out for 3 months or so. And when things died down, the heat died down on all of this, that he would be back. Lo and behold, Catherine Ma came in, she steadied the ship somewhat and went after 3 months. She's gone off to NPR and surprise, surprise, Paddy's back.
All right. So at this stage then, is this a move that he's making because he's confident that those big tech companies which pulled out in November, that they're back on board?
Yeah, well, I assume he's thinking that, but I mean, I would see it as quite a risky move because this is by no means, you know, the controversy that built up is by no means over. I mean, obviously with the Israel-Hamas conflict still ongoing, and now, you know, obviously some sentiment has changed somewhat. At the time when he made his comments, it was very much a sort of pro-Israeli, you know, backlash against him that was like, you did not say, you know, he did not comment on the victims of the attack on October the 7th and so on. He just said, you know, we need to be careful. You know, there needs to be, you know, war allies, you know, war crimes are war crimes, even if it's undertaken by allies. Now, you know, obviously this conflict is still going on. The controversy is still going on because there's been so many, you know, I think we can say, at least on this side of the water, that, you know, it's been atrocities that have been committed here. Or even if you say, you know, an unfair actions have been taken against Gaza. What you know, obviously that shows that sentiment has changed, but has it changed enough that he's going to get a free run here and partners are going to be back? I think that's a huge risk that the company has taken after steadying the waters somewhat, to think that this is over and that big name companies like Google, Intel and so on are going to walk back in.
So when, Charlie, will the first test come? Web Summit doesn't happen until much later in the year, but the company does run a regular series of conferences right around Europe and across North America, doesn't it?
That's right. I mean, the big flagship event is Web Summit Lisbon, which doesn't take place to November. Now, if you recall, that was the event that originally started in Dublin and then moved to Lisbon under a 10-year deal in quite controversial circumstances at the time. So that's the flagship event, and that's the gold mine, if you like. But I mean, there's an event taking place in the next couple of weeks in Rio, which is Web Summit Rio, and also, you know, and I think this has happened so close to that event that it will have no implication in terms of that, his return. There's also Collision, which is a bit of a tricky one for Web Summit. It's the North American event they run. It was in New Orleans for a few years. It's in Toronto. And, you know, the city has a sort of a bit of a difficult relationship. It's sort of, it's there, but it's not loved in the same way that Web Summit would be loved in Rio or even obviously in Lisbon. So I think, you know, we may see something happen there, and particularly it's in North America, which obviously is where a lot of the backlash against Cosgrave happened. So I think that might kind of give us an early indication of how partners feel about his return. Okay. But I think, you know, obviously Lisbon is going to be the big one.
All right, we'll watch that space. Charlie, for the moment, thanks very much. Charlie Taylor there from the Business Post. Back with more after this short break.
The music of John Williams gets the full symphonic treatment in two concerts presented by the National Symphony Orchestra at the National Concert Hall in June. Music from great blockbuster scores on Friday evening, June 21st, and on Saturday, June 22nd at 12:30 p.m. in an hour-long family concert. A relaxed performance for children aged 5 and above. CNCH.ie.
If you live in a period home, you know it can be a dickens to heat with those high ceilings and cold single-glazed sash windows. At Energlaze, we can't lower your ceilings, but we can lower your energy costs and increase the warmth and comfort of your home by retrofitting new ultra-thin Finio window glass into your existing timber frames. 8 times better than single glazing, it's the world's thinnest double glazing.
New Finio, modern comfort for older homes. Call 01901635 or visit energlaze.ie.
RTE Radio 1.
The Black Keys, live in concert. Three Arena Dublin, Friday, May 3rd.
Baby, I'm howling for you.
Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. The Black Keys, live at Three Arena. Tickets available now.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Hello again, you're listening to the News at 1. Now, do you have a gas hob? Well, if you do, the advice is to check it now. The Competition and Consumer Protection Commission says that there are hundreds of gas hobs in homes across Ireland that are fitted with a faulty elbow joint. They're renewing a warning issued first last year that these joints can crack, causing leaks and even explosions. We've been speaking to Gráinne Griffin, who's Director of Communications at the CCPC. I started by asking her what the issue is.
The issue is that there are hundreds of gas hobs in consumer homes in Ireland, and they have a faulty part in them. And this came to light last summer when it emerged that a part that had been used by lots of different manufacturers of gas hobs around the world was faulty. And it's a little elbow joint that brings the gas into the hob, and it can crack. And as everybody, I'm sure, listening is aware, when you have a gas leak, it raises up the most huge risk to consumers at home and everything everything from, you know, explosions, burns, poisoning, all sorts of harms are there in terms of consumers and gas leaks. So it's really, really important that anybody who has a gas hob just takes a moment to find out, is their hob affected by this faulty part? And if it is, not to use it and to contact the manufacturer immediately, and they will arrange for a replacement free of charge.
So which models are affected by this?
So there's quite a number, because a number of different manufacturers. So there's Belling, Electric Q, Cook & Lewis, Capel, Russell Hobbs and Comfy. But there's a full list on our website at ccpc.ie, along with the phone numbers and contact details of every single company affected.
And how far back does this go, Gráinne?
So this came to light in last summer, and both the ccpc.ie and all of the companies affected have been doing work since then to try and reach all of the different consumers. Thankfully, we're not aware of any serious incidences arising from the fault in Ireland, but there have been some very serious incidences in other parts of the world, including the UK, where there were explosions and injuries as a result of this faulty part. And so at this stage in the process, we know that every single consumer who left their contact details with a manufacturer, you know, perhaps they registered for a guarantee or something like that, and so their details were available. All of those consumers have been contacted directly. But there are many consumers out there who maybe no longer use that email address, or perhaps they just went into a store to purchase a gas hob and didn't leave any contact details. And those consumers have these gas hobs in their home. They are potentially extremely dangerous. These little elbow joints, this part can fracture at any point. It can cause a gas leak. It can cause a gas explosion. So we'd really encourage every consumer out there to check their hob, see it as it affected, and if it is, stop using it immediately.
And the particular focus is on hobs which were manufactured since 2019.
Yes, all of these hobs have been manufactured since 2019. There's about five different brands affected. And so if you've bought your hob in the last couple of years, you could be affected. And we would encourage you to visit ccpc.ie to see if you need to stop using it immediately.
So just to be clear about this, what you're saying is to consumers who have purchased one of these hobs, and they're listed on your website, you've just mentioned them, but for those who've purchased one of these hobs since 2019, to go back to the shop that you bought it from to get it checked out.
Yeah, you can. You don't even need to go back to the shop. There is a list of phone numbers on our website. You can just pick up the phone, give them a call, notify them that you have one of these hobs in your house, and they will arrange for someone to come out and replace the faulty part.
Right. And it's that simple. It's just this one little part, and once that's replaced, then the hob is safe.
Yeah, one tiny little part. The rest of the hob works absolutely perfectly, but it is extremely serious, and it's very, very important that consumers take action.
Right. Just on a completely separate matter, Gráinne, you've also issued a recall today in relation to, and there's quite a significant number of these, little colourful soft toys that people might be familiar with. They're often in these claw machines, which people might have come across. And you've a specific focus on, I think it's three different place centres in Munster.
That's right. There's three different play centres in Cork and in Kerry where you have these kind of claw machines where you put your money in and you're guaranteed to win a prize. And these toys, very, very small toys that were in these machines, they don't have CE marks and they can potentially present a risk to children. That means they haven't been tested to make sure that they don't have detachable parts, all those different safety checks that are very important to do with all toy products. 15,000 of them have been recalled. So if consumers have visited those kind of soft toy centres in the Cork or Kerry area, we would encourage them to check our website to see if they need to dispose of the product.
Yeah, and specifically three centres: Premier Play Ireland Limited in Tralee, Monkey Maze in Glanmire, Little Rascals in Mallow in County Cork.
Exactly. And I would say as well, with this one, a consumer did bring this issue to our attention. And so we would like to encourage all consumers, if they ever come across any form of product where they think, look, there might be an issue here, I'm not sure this meets regulations, please do contact us, because our teams can take action, check it out and potentially get it recalled, like in this case.
And that's Gráinne Griffin from the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. Wind energy accounted for 43% of the total Irish electricity supply last month, setting a new record for March. At a county level, wind farms in Kerry produced the most power, followed by Cork and Tipperary. Last year, the average wholesale electricity price in March was more than €140 per megawatt hour, but fell to €87 last month. Well, let's talk to Noel Kniff, who's CEO of Wind Energy Ireland, which represents the industry. So this March was unusually blowy, Noel, with the result that we had this new record.
It was indeed, Brian. Thanks very much for having me. Yes, one of the consequences of maybe some of the stormy weather we've had in March has been that a vast majority of our electricity over the course of the month, 43%, came from clean, domestically produced Irish wind energy. So that's up from the previous record, which was set in 2020. And as you mentioned, because Irish wind farms produce that power without burning fossil fuels, which are imported, it means that it reduces the wholesale electricity price. So we had a 40% reduction in the wholesale electricity price this March compared to March 2023. And all signs are pointing to that trend continuing over the rest of the year.
And wind farms in Kerry, Cork and Tipperary producing the most energy, is that because they typically have more wind farms, or was that part of Munster particularly stormy in March?
So you're right, a lot of the wind farms in Ireland are located around the south coast, but we do have a lot off the west coast and indeed in Donegal and in places in the north as well. Storm fronts tend to hit Ireland first on the southwesterly coast, so our typical wind comes from that southwesterly direction. So that's why counties like Kerry, like Cork, do tend to produce a vast majority of our wind energy over the course of an entire year. This month is the first month in our monthly reports where we've partnered with the Green Collective so that we can present this information on a monthly basis. It's something that we're looking forward to doing going forward. And of course, that's only going to grow and grow over time as we try to move towards our 2030 targets, Brian, and move from 40% renewable electricity to 80% renewable electricity over the next 5 years or so.
And I want to come to this question of price, of what consumers are paying. But just quickly on this, are there conditions where it's too stormy for the windmills to operate?
There are safety conditions on the turbines, of course, where the wind speed might get too high, and the wind turbines do turn out of the wind, so they activate a high wind speed shutdown, it's called. But that is an incredibly high speed, and it would need to be consistently maintained for a period of hours. So the wind turbines are engineered very well; they can manage these storm conditions. And indeed, over the weekend, when we did have Storm Kathleen here, a lot of our wind energy was coming from wind at that point.
All right. Just on this question of price, wholesale price is down, but what people are paying, what the consumers are paying, is not reflected in the bills, is it?
So how the electricity bill works is the wholesale energy price makes up a proportion of that, and then other components such as network costs or supplier charges are also taken into account. Mm-hmm. The very high price spikes that we've seen over the past 2 years have been a direct result of the Russian invasion of the Ukraine and the resulting security of supply challenges that we've had across the entire continent of Europe, with gas becoming extremely expensive. So the key message is the more wind energy that we get onto the system, the less imported fossil fuels that we need to burn, and that helps then to reduce wholesale prices, which get passed on to consumers over time. And we've seen some of those prices coming down with electricity suppliers over the previous months.
All right. Very good. Noel Kniff from Wind Energy Ireland, thanks very much for that.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
Alice, good afternoon to Joanne Cantwell.
Thank you, Brian. Good afternoon. We've had another managerial casualty already in the new League of Ireland season. Dundalk have sacked Stephen O'Donnell after 8 Premier Division games of 2024. Now, they didn't win any of those 8, instead claiming 3 draws and 5 defeats to sit bottom of the table. They're 7 points off safety after a 4-1 defeat away to Derry City on Friday night. It's O'Donnell's assistant manager, Patrick Craig. He's also been let go, with coach Liam Burns and head of football operations, Brian Gartland, taking charge on an interim basis. Republic of Ireland striker Amber Barrett hasn't yet been ruled out of tomorrow's historic fixture at the Aviva Stadium. Barrett made a short substitute appearance in the 1-0 defeat to France in Friday night's Euro qualifying opener in Metz with a hamstring injury forcing her off. She is still receiving treatment, with only Jesu officially out of the reckoning to face England at the moment. Still, there could well be some changes to the team. Megan Campbell made an impact when she came on to make her first appearance for Ireland in 14 months on Friday. The Ireland manager Eileen Gleeson sitting next to